Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Prema Vahini Satsang. And today, by Bhagwan's grace, like we had in the previous week, we have Brother Aman Jhaveri with us from the university. He's a research scholar in the Department of Management Studies. So along with myself and Sai Prakash, we will listen to his insights on the fifth chapter of Prema Vahini. So we had done first three paragraphs of chapter 5. So let's listen to the third paragraph once again, because we started our discussion on this and there are many beautiful concepts and very deep concepts in this chapter. So perhaps it is really important for us to dwell on this a little more. So let's listen to the third paragraph and then we will begin the discussion.
ప్రతి కార్యము సేవామయము ప్రేమమయము జ్ఞానమయము కావలను. జీవితం యొక్క విభాగాలు అన్నింటిలోనూ కర్మ భక్తి జ్ఞానములు నిండి ఉండవలను. ఇట్టి వాణినే పురుషోత్తమ యోగము అందురు. ఈ భావాలు ఆచరణలోకి రావలను. నోటితో చెప్పిన ప్రయోజనం లేదు. శుద్ధమైన భక్తి జ్ఞానములతో హృదయము వికసింపచేసుకుని సాధన చేయవలను. నామామృత మాధుర్యములు జీవిత కళయు వేరు కాదు. నామము యొక్క ఆంతరిక ఘోషకును బాహ్య జీవిత కళకును సామరస్యమున్నది.
ఎవ్రీ యాక్టివిటీ మస్ట్ బి సఫ్యూజ్డ్ విత్ ద స్పిరిట్ ఆఫ్ సర్వీస్ లవ్ అండ్ విజ్డమ్. ఎవ్రీ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్స్ లైఫ్ షుడ్ బి సాచురేటెడ్ విత్ యాక్షన్ డివోషన్ అండ్ విజ్డమ్. దిస్ ఇస్ వెరీలీ కాల్డ్ the Purushottama Yoga. These feelings have to be put into practice. Merely speaking about them is of no use. After one's heart blossoms with pure love and wisdom, one should engage in spiritual practices. The nectar of the divine name and the art of living are not different. There is a concordance between the name of the Lord resonating inside and the art of living outside.
So this is the third paragraph, and last time I think we began the discussion on one particular line in this paragraph where Bhagwan says that one's heart should blossom with love and devotion even before one starts to do the sadhana. Well, there are so many ways of
I think there was a question also by one.
Exactly. So we will take up that question, because Aman explained his perspective on this line, and so we had a question from a listener who said that normally when we take up a sadhana like japam, for example, we do that because we feel it will make us complete. We do it because we have a feeling of incompleteness, whereas what we discussed last time, that we should feel complete before we begin any sadhana. So that was something little difficult for her to comprehend. So she says, you know, if I am doing a Gayatri Japa, then why am I doing it? I am doing it because I am not fully realized, because there is a lot of incompleteness in me. So I do not really get it, how we can be complete and then begin the sadhana. So Aman, you had a perspective on this, isn't it?
Yes. Sai Ram to all the listeners, offering myself at Swami's lotus feet. Let me start by thanking once again Brother Vishu and Sai Prakash for having me here this week. I think that's one question that will come to anybody's mind. Any serious spiritual seeker naturally will ask that question. And as in everything that we do in life, spirituality also has multiple perspectives. So let me present some of my thoughts on this. There are two questions, there are two answers to this particular question. The first relates to why should we start sadhana with a sense of completeness? And the second is, how can we do it? So there's a why question and there's a how question.
Yes.
Let's first look at the why question. Why should we have a feeling of completeness before we even embark upon any sadhana? See, a human personality essentially is made up of two elements. one is called the content and the other is called structure. And this is the this is something that we read in our scriptures, but this has been articulated by contemporary philosopher Eckhart Tolle, who has written the book Power of Now. And the content part of the mind keeps on changing, but the structure part of the mind remains the same. Wanting or desire is the structure part. Content is, today I want a toy, tomorrow I may want to go to a good school, then I may want good friends, I may want a good job, I may want a good life, etc., etc. So the wanting keeps changing. The desire to want, although is constant throughout our lives. The challenge with this problem is that if we undertake sadhana as a personality, as let's say Aman Jhaveri, who is having certain pros, certain cons, certain past, certain expectations in the future, then what happens is, unknowingly, unconsciously, we start expecting from the sadhana also. And in today's literature, nowadays people call this as spiritual materialism. Which is that even if you are doing Gayatri, no?
Yes.
You want something from Gayatri. You want to extract something from Gayatri. As we want to extract something from everything in this world.
Yes.
I want to extract something from my relations. I want to extract something from nature. Yes. I want to extract something from my transactions. Mm. You want to extract something from Gayatri also. And Gayatri is so profound, it doesn't mind that.
Business deal.
Business deal. See, I mean, Gayatri does not mind that. It will give you what you want.
Exactly. And Swami is very happy that people come to God for their wants. I think Swami feels that, and Swami says, even, you know, the artha, arthaarthi, jigyansu, jnani.
Yes.
Swami says, if the artha comes to God, that itself is, you know, a very positive step.
Correct.
Because instead of going to anyone else, he's at least coming to God.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. But it becomes kind of difficult if we don't rise above that, you know, and if we keep on asking God for petty things, like Swami always gives the example that I am the Kalpa Ruksha in your backyard, and you are asking wild berries from me. So, coming back to the point, so then what happens is, you know, you do sadhana expecting something from Gayatri. And I'm taking the example of Gayatri Mantra because that is the question that has been posed. But the more important question that each one of us should ask is not what we expect from Gayatri, but what the Gayatri wants from us. Right? Not what we want from the mantra, what Gayatri wants from us. See, when we do sadhana from that perspective, no, then the true power of that mantra starts unfolding within us. Then we do sadhana not with the feeling of expectation, but with the feeling of exploration. And then we don't limit the mantra to petty desires that we have in our mind, right? Then we give a chance to divinity to play its role, unfolding its role in our life. That makes a lot of difference, because what happens is, if we do sadhana with certain expectations, and if those expectations are not fulfilled, then after some time, you know, we get bored with it, we get irritated with it, we get frustrated, and then we hear so many people saying, I have been doing Namasmarana for 10 years, but I have not achieved anything.
Yes.
They have not achieved what they wanted to achieve. Right? It is incorrect to say that I have not achieved anything. Because,
and then you start also experimenting with, you know, different deities, different gurus.
Exactly. And that is what Swami warned us against. That is why I feel one of the ways of looking at this statement of Bhagwan is that do not do sadhana from the point of view that I am a limited being living in space and time who wants some limited worldly things and for which I am doing sadhana, right? We are much beyond that, and that is why Swami referred to us as embodiments of Atma, embodiments of love. Can we do sadhana from that perspective? You know, as a famous philosopher Saint Nisargadatta Maharaj used to say, everybody reads Gita from Arjuna's point of view, but can you read Gita from Krishna's point of view?
Wow.
Because essentially you are that divinity itself, right? So sometimes in our life, let us look at Gita as if we are Krishna, not we are Arjuna. So I think one of the perspectives to this question is that let us step beyond our limitations and then approach the whole process of sadhana. The second part of this is, how can we do it? I feel it is not that you have to one day sit and feel I'm fully complete, and only when you are totally entrenched in that feeling then you start sadhana. I don't think that is even possible. But we have to start somewhere. And I think the only way to do that is to abide in Swami's words and Swami's teachings.
Sadhana again.
Exactly. Which is also sadhana. Which is sadhana. Definitely.
Yeah.
So once you abide in Swami's message, abidance does not mean reasoning. Abidance does not mean intellectually understanding that. Shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. Nididhyasanam is actually abidance. right? Which means you dwell on that knowledge rather than logically analyzing and reasoning on that.
Yes.
Once we do that, then I think spontaneously that expansion of the heart, expansion of blossoming of the heart happens. And then any sadhana we do, whether it is Gayatri or whether it is Karma Yoga, whether it is singing of bhajans, all of these will have a different impact on our lives, very different from what we expect, but something that is definitely good for our well-being, spiritual well-being and spiritual growth.
Yeah, that's very interesting because here we are looking at sadhana as a spontaneous action of a realized person. So that's the perspective you're talking about. Because even after realization,
yes,
people are bound by action.
Definitely.
So when Swami says love without duty is divine.
Yes.
That is love.
Yes.
It is a sense of being and where everything becomes sadhana.
True.
That time you are not chanting the name, you are not chanting, but everything that you do, your very breathing becomes your compassion to the world.
Yes.
And that itself becomes sadhana.
Correct.
But since obviously most of us are not there in that
yes.
level, and
I think that is one of the questions, you know, in that how part, you are saying you should be complete. How to be complete?
Yeah, that's what. Since it's a journey, sadhana is the path and the goal.
Yes.
True. So if you have confidence in yourself, if you have self-confidence, as Swami would say, then you have achieved your realization there and then. But how complete it is, how interested we are in it, it varies. And here also Swami is mentioning about bhakti and jnana. And, you know, a very interesting episode which Swami had narrated in one of his discourses comes to mind. This is from the life of Adi Shankara.
Okay.
And basically there is this one of his disciples who is Giri. And he is not a very bright student. And but he has deep love for the Atma, and he says everything is Atma. He says, I don't need to understand the rules of grammar, I don't need to understand your formulas and all this, I believe only in the Atma. And then he came to Adi Shankara as a disciple, and the disciples asked him, why did you come as a disciple? And he said, for me to have the awareness of that jnana, that I am one with Atma, I need a guru. So that's why I have come to the guru. And on the face of it, he was a very dull student, because he couldn't grasp the technicalities, he couldn't grasp the complications and all the difficulties of the language, this, that, formulas and rules and do's and don'ts.
Grammar,
and all that.
Sanskrit.
Grammatic Sanskrit, he was far from it. But one thing he loved to do is to serve the Guru. So he would selflessly serve the Guru with a lot of devotion. And one of those days, Adi Shankara, he said, tomorrow I am going to teach you all a very, very important meter in Sanskrit language. All of you should come and attend the class. And so everybody was very excited. Oh my God, something new is going to come up. And then once that's taught to us, we are bang going to start composing and start writing commentaries on the Vedas, Upanishads. I mean, they didn't have television and radio at that time. So their entire entertainment was from the Vedas and Upanishads. Can you believe it? So there was this group of Adi Shankaracharya students who were all very excited and very happy and said, wow, something new. And so they all came, and I believe Swami, even in the discourse, Swami said next day all of them were up early and they took their notebooks and and with absolute sincerity they rushed to the spot where Guru was. And the Guru is sitting there, Adi Shankara is sitting there, and he's not starting the lesson. Oh. And they are wondering what's happening. They said, we all are here. He says, no, Giri is not here. And they said, I mean, seriously? Are you going to wait for him? Seriously, you're going to wait for him? Even if you explain this, nothing is going to get into his head. And they all were waiting, and the Guru was very patient. And the moment Giri washed the Guru's clothes, he dried them, and then he came rushing, because he knew he was a little late. But he completed his service that he would do every day, seva, and he came running. As he came running to the guru, he started singing in that Totaka meter.
Oh.
The meter which he was supposed to teach them on that day, the Totaka meter which he was supposed to give, that's what, how his name became Totakacharya. And the name, the meter, the knowledge, the, and he composed spontaneous outburst of a composition in that meter. Where did it come from? Just bhakti.
Yes.
So he says that bhakti, if you have filled your heart with that bhakti, automatically that jnana comes.
Come. Yes.
And it's just the smile of the guru, possibly just a nod. That's all it is. And so when Swami says, suffuse your heart with bhakti and jnana. You know, we are so fortunate to have lived with Bhagwan and seen his every action.
Yes.
And if we are just able to serve him with all our heart and with all our love, forget jnana. Okay, you chant 21 times Omkara, Omkara Suprabhatam, this, that, what will it give me? If I chant it for 20 years, it will give me this. If I chant for, forget all that.
Yes.
I am just singing it for Swami. I am just doing every action of mine for Swami. That itself is jnana.
In fact, it just reminds me of Ratanlal Amma. You know, we just lost her. Mm. And the whole Sai fraternity, the whole Sai world misses the presence of such a powerful, beautiful soul whom Swami had really handpicked and literally carved for all of us as an example of service and devotion. I was just seeing one of the videos in the early years, how she started cooking for Bhagwan. And of course, that's very interesting, you know, when you see her story, it almost to me parallels the story of Professor Kasturi. Because the first time when Swami sees Professor Kasturi, the first statement Swami says is, "You are going to write my life story."
Oh, wow.
And it's like he doesn't even have an idea who this person is. Okay, and he's out of the blue, he says, "You are going to write my life story." And you know, he's completely flabbergasted. But from that point onwards, he's always on alert, you know.
Right.
His mind starts working that I have to document whatever it is, I have to document this guy.
Absolutely.
You know, this person. Even though I don't know, I know nothing about him. But that's how Swami prepared him. And it's the same, I didn't know that it was almost the same it was with Ratanlal Amma. Because, you know, in 1970-71, you had this Indo-Pakistan war. And Swami was in Vrindavan. And one family used to send food for Bhagwan. And at that time, there was curfew and nobody was allowed to come out of the house. So, it was a very, very difficult situation. And Ratanlal Amma was there with Bhagwan in that old bungalow. And Swami's food, for some reason, was not coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come for one day. It didn't come for 2 days.
Oh my
God. It didn't come for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And even Ratanlal Amma didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. So, for 4 days, there was actually no food for Bhagwan. Because nobody was on the streets. And so, she was like getting constantly worrying, we're not able to sleep in the night. What will happen to Bhagwan? You know, Swami's. So on the fifth day, she takes courage and she says, "Swami, you know, main kuch banao, Swami. You know, can I please do something?" And she says, "Swami, I know I'm not a South Indian. I don't know to make any South Indian dishes, but cooking I know, Swami." You know, with very timidly, sheepishly, she asks, and the moment she asks, Swami says, "I was waiting for this. What took you so long?" "Waiting for this. Banao.
So beautiful. So
and that's how she started cooking for Bhagwan. So she made something for the dinner and she said, Swami, this is for lunch. And then, "Swami, can I make something for dinner?" "Haan, banao. Kya banao?" "Puri, I know. Now, puri is a North Indian sweet. They eat in South India." "Haan. Make. Then next day Swami says, no, you have to make sambar also, rasam also." Swami comes to the kitchen and, you know, Swami teaches her how to boil the, you know, dal, how to make sambar, how to make rasam.
Mm.
And that is how, I mean, personally Swami standing in the kitchen. That's how she actually
learnt
completely South Indian. We used to never have this many chutneys. We didn't, you know, once in a while we used to make chutneys, and then we don't eat so much of coconut there, you know. Coconut was not available in North India. I had no clue about any of the South Indian dishes. But you know, that's how Swami trained her, and slowly Swami loved now the idea, you know, that whole arrangement, and now there is someone who can make food, you know, within his control, because you know, some devotees are serving food and Swami cannot tell them, you know.
Correct.
They would send for one or two people, now when Swami had someone of his own who can make food, so she said, now though, Swami, earlier, you know, there was food for one or two people, now every day he'll keep having guests because he loved to feed people, he loved to have more and more people eating with him. And so he told, I have, suddenly, you know, two people, it became four people, five people, 10 people, 15 people, 20 people, you know, I don't have no, so some days you have no clue how many people you are going to eat, some days it would be like 50 people.
Mm.
You know, Swami loved to feed people.
And he always had somebody at the dining table.
Yes.
You know, whenever
yes.
he had his food, so he always share it with somebody.
Yes.
Never kind of
never,
eat it alone.
Yes. First of all, we have seen how much he eats. The whole joy is the other people eating.
Exactly.
the joke on this is when Swami used to come to hostel, and before Brahmarpanam ends,
yes,
Swami's food is over.
Yeah, yeah, Brahma has already had.
Yes, yes.
But the interesting thing is, you know, this karma bhakti jnana, you know, she says that suddenly I have no clue how many people are going to it every day. You can't ask Swami also, no? Suddenly he will call yes. guests. So he says, so we show, when you know, asked how did you manage if suddenly so many numbers came? And she says, see, by that time I had read Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
Mm.
So I know how, you know, Swami used to do with Sakama and all these people, you know, Swami, he can touch and, you know, things can multiply.
Yes.
So I should just not think, just do. And only the end, he says, only after everything is over, then I think, kaise hua yaar ye? How did it happen?
Mm.
How did it happen? And then she said, see, what is this body? This body is inert matter.
Beautiful.
Only the Atma does it. Only Swami does it. Only the Atma. If you think you are doing it, it will never happen.
Correct.
Because it is the Atma which is doing, that's why it is to happen.
Amazing.
But you know, that was such a profound message. And she was just saying it, you know.
It's experience.
It's
she
experience,
has been, she
yeah.
has lived. In yeah. fact, just before auntie was taken to the hospital, I was just having a word with her. One of those days, auntie used to sit and grace that veranda
yes.
and keep wishing everybody who was yes. walking along. And so I just went to auntie and I said, auntie, how are you? She said, Sai Prakash, I'm fine. I'm just waiting for my moments. And I'm just sitting and thinking of Bhagwan. So what, auntie, what are you doing? And then she said, I mean, what is the purpose of this whole life? Kya karna hai, Sai Prakash? In this life, what should we do? Just serve Bhagwan, that's all. What more is there in life? What more is there? I mean, is there anything else other than serving Bhagwan?
Yes.
Is life worth anything else?
Yes.
And she told it in such a sweet and such a loving, I just felt that was like a great message for all of us. She has led by example.
Led by example.
So she has just served Bhagwan. So in fact, when on another occasion when I was speaking with auntie, she was saying, one day she was kind of very down and upset with Swami. And Swami said, Hare, kya ho gaya tumko? Swami was in Vrindavan and kya ho gaya, castroil face? What happened to you? And she told Swami, you are giving all spiritual experiences to so many people. You know, somebody sees you as light, somebody sees you as Krishna, somebody sees you as this, that I don't get anything. All I get to see is how much chutney, how much sambar, how much simple. Then suddenly, you know, there was a deep sense of pain in her heart that all I'm doing is this. Then Swami looked at her, hey, whom are you cooking for? Swami, I'm cooking for you. Then what else is there?
Beautiful.
And then he told, take namaskar. And she says, the moment she touched Swami's feet, that deep anxiety, that pain, no, was just sucked out. And she's if you try to feel bad, you can't feel bad after that. He has just pulled out that the very source of that thought has been pulled out by him. So he just, like
yes.
a vacuum cleaner, just
yes.
sucked it out.
Yes.
Now she was like, wow.
No, in fact, you know, in Jnana Vahini, the entire Jnana Vahini is about, you know, Vivek, Vairagya and, you know, all advanced Vedantic terms which I don't know anybody who understands it fully. But the beauty is, the last paragraph of the last page, Swami says, even if you don't have any of this, but Guru's grace is there, then you will get everything that is required. Even in a book like Jnanavahini, Swami ends with a note on bhakti, and that is service to Guru. So I think ultimately everything boils down to that, but I want to go back to one word that Sai Prakash had used last time, which was integrity. See, whether you choose to serve Swami through cooking food, or by singing bhajans, doing Gayatri, doing self-inquiry, I think you have to be committed to that.
Right.
And do it with full focus and heart. And one more very important thing is, even in the case of all the great devotees that we talk about, see, they are not doing it with the expectation of getting something from Swami, right? Yes. They are doing it for the love of Bhagawan.
Yes.
Anything that is done for the love of God, I think is bound to reflect in our being as jnana, as bhakti, as karma.
Absolutely.
So, I personally felt that was... In fact, last week I had a chance to speak with one of our alumnus, and he was sharing with me that once in interview room, his family had got an interview, and Swami closed the door, and Swami stood there, and Swami told them, how long will you depend on this physical body? You know, Swami was pointing at his body, and Swami said, how long are you going to depend on this physical body? When are you going to internalize me? Leave the pravritti mark, go to the nivritti mark. That is what Swami was telling him. And as Swami was speaking, Swami came and sat on the chair, and he asked Swami, Swami, how to internalize you? Swami didn't answer, Swami ignored. After 10 minutes, again he asked, Swami again ignored, ignored. This went on. After 40-45 minutes, again he asked the question, and then Swami said, the only way to internalize God is through prema. And when he heard the answer, he was a little bit dejected, because he was thinking Swami is going to give him some great tattvamasi, shweta ketu, something like that, you know. But Swami just told him that, you know, it is prema. And he confessed, he said, you know, Aman, when I walked out of the interview room, I was so sad because I was really expecting something great from Swami. And something so esoteric and rare, which only I will be the sole proprietor and owner of that. But Swami told such a simple thing. But then he says that, you know, that was way back in the 80s. And he said, you know, over the years being with Bhagawan, physically being away from Swami, he said, I realized that the only way is to develop love.
Yes.
There's no other way. And then, of course, he says, you know, Mirabai and all these saints, see, what did they do? They had only love for God. And that manifested as jnana, as bhakti, as everything.
Yes. Wonderful. This also reminds me of something that happened in Vrindavan many years ago. Where, you know, we have these three sessions. And so there was one occasion where Swami had not called for three sessions for a few days. And then Swami, when finally Swami called, all the boys were so eager that, you know, they dashed into three, and on the way some 6-7 flower pots broke, and all the teachers were absolutely perturbed. And first of all, the teachers were really very sad, and they were warning all the students, you know, they were very afraid also what is going to happen because it's sheer indiscipline and all that. And because sometime back three flower pots had broken in a similar fashion, and Swami had not come to Vrindavan for 2 years.
And now they have broken some eight or nine.
So 4 years directly.
So everyone was like, now what is going to happen?
So, when Bhagwan came, and it was like so tensed environment, nobody speaking, everybody is breathing so heavily there. And Swami walks into the jhula room, and then suddenly Swami looks around, and da 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 da, something around he starts. Some da 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 da, da 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 da. So, everybody is like, oh my God. Swami is singing. And so, you know, everybody is now relaxed, and, you know, and okay, fine, Swami is good. And but there was one person, one police officer, who felt this was like a cardinal sin, what has happened. Boys have to be taken to task and all that. And interestingly, Swami asked this person to speak that day. And as he speaks, he really lambasts the boys and about the discipline that they had, I mean, indiscipline that they had exhibited and all that. But Swami stops him, and Swami says, do you know why my boys did it? They did it because of love for Swami. And that is what is most important.
True.
I mean, yes, It's not that in the name of love for Swami you can do whatever indiscipline you want, but I think this is something which the Satyasai University or the all the Balvikas, you know, that's I think is the endeavor.
Correct.
Everywhere or the what happens in the even the Satyasai Samiti for everyone, I think that is the endeavor. If we are on that path of love for God, then everything else automatically slowly falls into place.
And you know, just to come back to that question on sadhana, and I think a good takeaway could be the fact that we need not actually wait and intellectualize all these things.
Correct.
Because you know, because we're talking about Shankaracharya, he also writes, you know, he describes the Upanishads and Vedas as Maharanyam, Shabda Jalam Maharanyam. He says it is a forest of words, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the Upanishads is called Brihadaranyaka Upanishad because it is so big and so somebody can get lost in it. So I
and
feel
Shabda Jalam.
Yes, it is a Jalam. Yes,
it's a net.
Yeah. So I think the most important thing for spiritual seekers is whatever state we are now, whatever we think of ourselves, let us start something. You know, let us start doing sadhana.
Yes.
And the process, as Sai Prakash told, you know, it is a process, it is a goal, and it is the end. You know, it is a process, it is a goal. Eventually, that sadhana will purify us.
Yes.
And give us what we want, also give us what we eventually didn't ask for. You know, there's a beautiful story, anecdote, that if we read all these Puranas, no, we know that these people who pray to God, you know, and then God appears before them. And God questions them, tell me what do you want, you know, ask for a boon. We always see this repeating in the Purana especially. So somebody asks this question, if God is omniscient, why does God ask this question? That ask me what you want. God can directly grant it, right?
Yes.
But God asks that because when you started your sadhana, you would have had something in mind. But the process of sadhana itself transforms you. And by the time you finish your sadhana, no, what you started it for may not be what you want.
Exactly.
You would have risen above that.
Yes.
And therefore, God gives you an opportunity to ask not what you want, but what was it that you wanted, and now what is it that you want after the sadhana.
In fact, you know, I used to have this thought, since you mentioned, I used to feel that, you know, we hear of the stories of, you know, demons and so many people asking boons, and, you know, they have done penance for like 100 years, penance for thousands of years. And I used to always think, if someone does penance for like 100 years, 200 years, after that, will he have this desire, oh Lord, give me this boon, I want to kill this fellow, you know?
I want to sit on my father's lap.
Yes. Yeah, I used to always think like that, you know, will you have, I mean, after doing that, because, you know, if for 3 hours also, if you sit and do continuous namaspana, you feel so elevated.
Yes.
And if you're like for 10 years, if you're 100 years, if you have done that, and you would have forgotten that thought,
you know,
would have gone.
Vishu, that is the exact problem of the personality, you know, that is what I was talking about. That is the personality of an individual is so deeply entrenched, no?
Exactly.
That these are examples that tell us that, see, even if you do so-called sadhana, I don't even know whether it is sadhana or not.
Correct.
But if you pray to God even for 1,000 years, and you end up asking a silly thing, no?
Yes.
It is possible. It is possible, and it has been recorded in our Puranas.
Yes. In fact, I had the same question, you know, when I joined Bhagwan school, 11th class. One day I asked my wing teacher, sir, how is it? The Swami says that, you know, anger is something that one has to conquer, and that is the way to, you know, if you have to become a saint, you have to conquer desire, you have to conquer anger. And I have to say, sir, how is it that you have all these saints, you know, say Durvasa.
Yes.
He's a saint. You hail him as a saint, but he's completely someone who can lose his fuse at any point in time. So how is it that, you know, someone who has done penance for so many years, suddenly he succumbs to a desire, suddenly he succumbs to anger, you know, to revenge. So then that teacher told me that, see, that is how slippery the spiritual path is. And that is the reason why you have to be extra, extra careful. And I feel that is something that is being hinted here. I think any sadhana that you do, you have to ensure that, you know, the fruits of your sadhana, they don't dissipate. It's not in a vessel, the merits of the sadhana are not in a vessel that has a hole in it.
Yes.
I think if you are constantly on guard, you know, that as I'm doing the sadhana, I have to ensure that my heart is filled with love. I'm doing it with selflessness.
Yes.
Selflessness. I'm doing it with purity. Then I think we'll get the benefit of the sadhana.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's move on to the next paragraph.
క్రియను ఈశ్వరార్పణ చేసిన మీదట స్వార్థము పదార్థము పరమార్థము అనియు ఏకరూపమైపోవును. ఇంతవరకు నీవు నేను వేరు అనుకొనుచూ వచ్చిన భేదబుద్ధిని తొలగించుకుని ఏకం కావలెను. నీవు నేను కలియుట వల్లనే మనం అగుదుము, ఇక మనం అతడు ఏకం కావలెను. జీవుడు మొదట ఈ సృష్టితోనూ ప్రకృతిలో తదుపరి పరమాత్మతోనూ సామరస్యమును సాధించవలెను. ఓం తత్ సత్ మంత్రమునందు ఈ భావమే సూచించబడినది.
When an act is performed as an offering to the Lord, swartha or welfare of oneself, parartha or welfare of others, and paramartha or supreme goal of life all become one. The differential approach followed till now of considering you and me as separate has to be given up to become one. When you and me combine, it becomes we. Next, we and he should become one. An individual has to first seek harmony with creation, and then with nature, and then the Supreme Being. This is the feeling indicated in the mantra, Om Tat Sat.
So here Bhagwan is saying that once you perform an act as an offering, then everybody's welfare is ensured. Samasta loka sukhino bhavantu.
In fact, I am also reminded of a quote by Vivekananda where Swami talks about first I, then we, then, you know, subsuming everybody and the entire creation. In one of the discourses, Swami Vivekananda says that what is the difference between man and God? And he says that man is an infinite circle with no circumference and a center at one place. God is also an infinite circle with no circumference but a center at every place. And he says the purpose of sadhana is to understand that you are not located in one name, form, time and space. And I think that is exactly what Bhagwan is pointing out here.
Yes.
In fact, another story from the life of Adi Shankara comes to mind.
Sure.
Of course, here again, I'm just taking this aspect of serving with love. Because here he says, infuse every action of yours with love and offer it to the Lord.
Yes.
Then, you know, there is benefit on your side, parartha and paramartha. So this is also a story which is quite well known, but the way Swami put it is very beautiful in the sense there is this Kapalika. He is like a devotee of Lord Shiva. And he one day comes to Adi Shankaracharya and he says, you know, I've got a rare boon from Lord Shiva. And Adi Shankara was smiling. He said, okay, what is it? And then he said, Lord Shiva has offered me a seat right next to him in Kailasha. So Swami is narrating the story and he says, he has offered me a seat next to him. They said, wow, very good. Go ahead, enjoy it. But there is one condition. Okay, what is that condition? He said that for me to get that position, I need to make him an offering. He said, okay, what's stopping you? He said, I need to either offer the head of a king or a saint. So I need to offer the head of a king or a saint. Then he says, you know, why break my head for the king? After all, you are preaching Advaita. You are not
attached to the body.
No,
and all
this is a win-win situation. This is an absolute win situation. You get to prove your philosophy to the whole world by giving up your own head, and I get a seat next to Lord Shiva. I mean, you can't get a better deal. So Adi Shankara was smiling and he said, okay, you take my head. I have no problem, but I don't think my disciples will be happy with that. So they might have a problem, you know. So then he said, okay, you do one thing. You come at a time when they are not around. And that time you can take my head. So he says, morning they all go for bath and ablutions in the river. That time you come. And before they come back, you would have had my head. So that, you know, your heart's desire will be fulfilled. And so he comes in the morning and all of them have gone for their bath, and suddenly Padmapada who was having his bath, he had the strong feeling in him that his guru, his master, something is happening to him.
Oh.
And he had this whole vibration and he had this whole push from within him. And he said, what's happening to our master? What's happening to our guru? And then he just left, just quickly completed his bath and came running from there. And as he was coming running, spontaneously he started chanting mantras which were addressed to Lord Narasimha.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami is saying that he started chanting the mantras which were addressed to Lord Narasimha, and because of chanting those mantras, he embodied Lord Narasimha.
Mm-hmm.
He became one with the mantra. He became Lord Narasimha himself. And he just came on the spot and tore the Kapalika apart.
Oh, this is a very different version from what we generally know.
Yeah. Yes. He said that he came on the spot and he saved his guru and he tore the Kapalika apart. Because as he was chanting the mantra of Lord Narasimha, he embodied the mantra itself.
Wow.
And where did it start? It just started with love.
Beautiful.
He started his action was because of his love for his guru. That intense love, immediately there was a sink between what was happening, and immediately he felt the urge. And as he started running and chanting, he became Lord Narasimha himself and tore that person apart. That's all.
I think it's also, when we talk about love for Swami, I remember one of our seniors who has come several times in hostel, he narrates this wonderful experience. He was on duty with Bhagwan. And one day there was a group, what he believed to be from somewhere in Russia, but we're not sure, but somewhere around Eastern Europe. And when they came, Swami came, and you know, all of them shouted together, Swami, we love you. I believe that used to be the practice in those days, you know.
Yes.
That ladies' side especially. So Swami behaved as if Swami did not hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Then again they shouted, Swami, we love you. And again Swami, you know, behaved that way. It happened for the third time. Then Swami walked away. After a couple of steps, Swami came back, and Swami, the lady who was sitting in the first row, Swami told her, to love Swami is to follow Swami. And then Swami just kind of walked away. And when I heard this experience, I was kind of, you know, just thinking, what does that actually mean? And I personally felt it's all about priority. You know, how much priority do we give to Swami in our life? See, if we see our lives, we play different roles. We play the role of a friend, of a son, of a father, mother, you know, brother, anything, colleague at office. But we also play the role of a devotee. Or let's say a student of Swami in our case. How much priority do we give to each of these roles? And is our priority to the role of being a Sai student or a devotee of Swami highest in the hierarchy?
Right.
Because then what happens is, see, many times I have seen that, I have experienced that with myself and my colleagues, that at certain points we face conflicts with our friends,
yes,
even with our family members.
Yes.
Once you come to Swami and then you go back home, your parents may tell you to do certain things which they feel are not wrong, but which you know is what Swami not expecting from you. And that is the time when this question of priority comes, right? What is my priority? Is my priority being Swami's student, or is my priority of being a son, being a friend, being a colleague, etc., etc.? And I think every time, one of our teachers always tells us, you know, Professor Rao, who has been very, Swami used to love him so much.
Yes.
I used to ask him, sir, why do you think Swami loved you so much? Of course, he never answered that directly. But he said, you know, Aman, I always followed one thing. Every time in life, Swami will give you a choice. The world versus Swami. Always choose Swami. I have done that. I don't know anything else. He's a professor of strategic management. He loves financial numbers. But I know that when he said that, he really said that from his heart. And I feel to love Swami actually is to follow Swami. And following Swami means to give priority to Bhagawan. Every time we are faced with this situation of world versus Swami, I think if we consistently choose Swami, you know, then we can say that yes, we with a measure of confidence that we have certain amount of love for Bhagawan.
I was just thinking, as you said, when Swami came to that lady and said, the way to love Swami is to follow him.
Yes.
I thought she would get up and follow him to the interview room.
That's what
I was just thinking, wow, that would have been instant Swami.
Maybe that actually happened, but I was not told about that. But Swami also in one of the discourses, you know, even if you take it literally, in one of the discourses to MBA, Swami has told that do not follow me, I may not lead.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do not walk in front of me, I may not follow. Right. Walk with me. That is what Swami has told.
Yes.
And that's again very profound. Probably we need some more different series on that.
Yeah.
But just to, you know.
But I think, but that is the difference between, you know, liking Swami and loving Swami.
Yes.
I think if you value the master, then you want to master the master's values.
Yes.
As they say,
yes.
You know, the best way to value a master is to master his values. So, many times we say that we love Swami, but perhaps love is such a profound concept that we are still at the stage of liking Swami.
Correct.
You know, I think that journey is what is needed. And I think all those people whom God really loves, you know, the mention of Tyagaraja and Swami's eyes would be overwhelmed. The mention of Isharama, mention of Sakubai, you know, people like the Meera. I think these are people who really love the Lord, and that's the reason why Lord just melts even if their name is mentioned.
Then the next point Swami is talking here is very beautiful. One, it should become move from I to we.
Yes.
And next, we and he should become one.
One.
You know, one thing which comes to my mind is that huge in the Vidyagiri Stadium.
Yes.
Before we had all these statues coming up, there was a huge banner on the rock. It is life is a journey from I to we. It's a huge one of those quotations which was written there, and it is you know a very powerful message that I think is very unique in a sense, because Swami doesn't define spirituality as an exclusive practice.
Yes,
it is not something which I have done, I am growing, I am spiritual.
Yes,
I have realized nothing. Correct. Samastha loka sukino bhavantu. I mean,
yes, yes.
Well, it is expansion is love.
Yes,
not
absolutely.
Contraction is love.
Yes. In fact, that also reminds me of Swami Vivekananda. After Swami Vivekananda returns from the US and now he wants to train a few monks, so he picks up these young inspired individuals, and one of the monks comes to him and says, Swamiji, I have been meditating for so many days now, and so he asks, what do you do? He says, I go into that room, I close off the lights, and I spread the mat, I sit there, and you know, I am trying to still my mind, and I'm not able to achieve that stillness and that Amanaska stage. I'm not able to achieve. And Vivekananda says, I will tell you what to do. You go to that room, close that mat, switch on that light, step out. Go to the street and serve that person who is lying on the ground, which has no medicines. Go to that hut and serve that old lady who has no one to look after her husband died. That is the only way you will get moksha. You will not get moksha like this. I think that is a powerful message. I think Swami gave all of us.
I think Swami is always warning us against extremes. You know, don't get into that mood that it's only meditation and solitude that's going to get me there, or don't, you know, get into that mood that no, it is only serving the others and through that only, because then that becomes a problem. That itself, you know, kind of builds up the ego, builds up the illusion, and takes us away further and further from goal. And I feel that's the beautiful teaching of Swami, where again and again, last time also we discussed Bhagya sir's experience, you know, where Swami told him that if you exclude that this is worldly and this is spirituality, then in 1,000 births also you will not get what you want.
Right.
And I think that is something that we have to come back again and again, that as devotees of Swami, can we do service in the same spirit? Can we do Namasmarana in the same spirit? Can we do bhajans in the same spirit of offering everything to Bhagwan? Seeing, I remember one of our teachers narrating this experience to us in the class, and Swami, he used to be very angry. He used to feel anger very often. And
Swami once told him, he asked Swami, Swami used to call him Durvasa, you know, just in a lighter manner. And he told Swami, I am not able to overcome this anger. And then Swami told him that, look, what you do is, if you get angry on your wife, you tell her to get cold water for you. He says, Swami, if she gets that glass, I will be so angry, I will throw that glass on her only. So, then, you know, Swami was telling her, no, take deep breath, stand home and all those things Swami told. Then Swami told him that, of course, that didn't work. And eventually Swami materialized a medallion for him with Swami's photo. And Swami told him, whenever you feel angry, look at this face of mine. And then he was telling me that he didn't ever have to use it actually. After that, only once in his life he has ever used it. But he told the trick in that was, it was not the medallion. The trick was that Swami told him that whenever you feel angry, you look at my form in your mind's eye. And he has been doing that, and he told, in my whole life after that, I used that medallion only once. So I think even these emotions that we have, whether to love others or not, to serve somebody else, that also can become a barrier unless we take it in the spirit of, I am serving Swami in that person. Maybe it will start by physically reminding ourselves again and again, this is Swami, this is Swami, until it becomes natural and spontaneous. Yeah.
The next point Swami is saying is, he says, apart from I and we, and then he, we should become one. Then he says, we should identify ourselves with the creation.
Yes.
He says,
yes.
Next we should identify. So, that whole hierarchy of Vyashti, Samashti, Sashti.
Yes.
So, individual, society and nature, creation. And, I mean, Swami's love for birds, animals and nature as such, and his control over nature.
Yes.
We can go on forever.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think what is really significant here, and even in the previous paragraph, where Swami is saying, you know, the nectar of the divine name and the art of living are not different. There is a concordance between the name of the Lord resonating inside and the art of living outside.
Yes.
You know, as I was thinking about this line, what occurred to me is Swami is telling you cannot, same thing that we were saying, you know, you can't differentiate that this is
correct.
Spiritual and this is worldly.
Correct.
I think that is a very, very important perspective.
Yes.
And that is getting reiterated in the next paragraph, where Swami is saying, offer everything to the Lord.
Yes, yes.
And I think there are so many people who are trying to do that in their own way. You know, earlier once we had discussed about this Love at Work group, you know, they are all the time having this satsang about how they are trying to see Swami in different people. And I think that is something which is perhaps doable for all of us, you know, in our own little ways. So in this group, they keep reminding themselves, you know, and they keep sharing every day about how they were trying to see Swami in the other person. And, you know, a doctor says how when this particular patient came and he started imagining Swami in the other person, and how the whole perspective changed. I think this is something that if we do it really with integrity, then I think everything else just happens.
You know, I am also reminded of a funny story on this Namasmarana thing that Swami used to, it's there in the man management book.
Yes.
You know, where Swami gives this so nicely, Swami narrates. Swami says, there's a man, he's doing Namasmarana. Keshavaya Namaha. Then he asks his wife, has the dhobi come? Madhavaya Namaha. Is the tea ready? You know.
Yes.
And see, what Swami is telling us here is the exact opposite, you know.
Yes.
That Namasmarana is not contradicting to your daily life, in the sense that you don't have to say, now I will take time out and I will do Namasmarana. This is the example that Swami gives, that when you take time out, actually what you are doing, your mind is still dwelling.
Yes.
You know, I was just listening to one spiritual discourse by one contemporary saint, and he narrates in Hindi, and he was telling that, you know, one lady came to me. So nicely he was telling, one lady came to me. She told, Swamiji, मैं तो मंत्र जाप करती हूँ पर मुझे तो ये संसार ही नजर आता है. I do mantra, but I can only see the world. Then he said, तो मैंने उनसे कहा, माता जी, आपने जीवन के 70 साल तो है सिर्फ संसार का अध्ययन किया है ना, तो संसार ही दिखेगा. For 70 years of your life, you have seen the world, you have observed the world, you have involved, so you see the world. Now for 70 years, you do japa, you will definitely see God. Of course, in a lighter manner is what he said. But I think the whole pursuit, and again what Swami talks about, is again and again coming back to the same thing.
Yes.
Spiritual life and worldly life are not contradicting.
Yes.
You know, don't separate them artificially.
Yes.
In every act of ours, even if our hands are engaged in work,
let the minds be engaged in the name and form, in Namasmarana or in abidance of the self or whatever you want to call it, yes, depending on your personal orientation.
It should become part of you, part of your, yes, breath. In fact, again, it reminds me of a very interesting, funny incident actually that Ratanlal Amma shares. One day Swami actually played a prank on her, and I will come to the last part because that is something really interesting. So finally Swami wanted to make up for all the trouble that, you know, Swami had really troubled her like Krishna used to trouble all mothers. And so finally Swami called her to the dining table, and then Swami made her sit next to him. Swami quickly finished food, and then Swami made the boys serve her food. He says, that much food I will take. That is for my 7 days of food. 7 days of food. I don't know how I'm going to eat. But Swami is insistent. Swami stood there. No, you eat. You know, Swami wanted to really feed her well. And she said, it's very difficult. I can't eat so much. And she said, the only way I could do is, I just keep trying serum. I should take the food and drink little water. Take the food, drink little water. Serum. And she said, I have to do it quickly also. Because I have not finished. Swami is not leaving. Mm. And if Swami doesn't leave, you know, all the guests will be there waiting down unnecessarily. They also get delay. So I'm thinking, first of all, Swami is standing. I don't want him to stand. So somehow, my only recourse was serum. Tell serum and eat and serum. So somehow she finished. And she says, you know, that day just chanting serum, only I managed the situation. And another day, it seems Swami had gone to some place and someone served food. It seems Swami used to take hot, you know, Swami from Andhra, Swami couldn't manage hot in the earlier days. But one day, a green chili went to Swami, okay? And Swami bit that. And suddenly, you know, there was a reaction on Swami's face. So, and she said, hey, saram saram bolo. See, I didn't even realize, I'm telling Swami, when she saw Swami, having, you know, made that face, saram saram bolo. It's like, am I stupid now, silly I was. You know, it had become so much a part of me that kuch bhi, anything happens, you know, just saram.
So sweet. It's really amazing, you know, see how much devotion they must be having to, how much, I don't know, 24 hours only this would be going on in their minds.
Yeah, so that, you know, when you don't even know that you're doing that, actually.
So whenever the form puts you in trouble, the name is the recourse. In fact, I don't know if you're running out of time. I'll just narrate one more of,
sure,
since we're on Ratanlal Aunty's, some of her experiences. This is also something very beautiful and connected to the name of Swami. The Anantapur College inauguration. And there was one room just above the landing of the staircase, one small room for Swami, like a reading room, and then one small room where there was a bed for Swami, and that led to a balcony outside. And so those two rooms were, Swami said, make it very small, and that room is where I will, what I will use. So they took his word so literally that they made the entrance very small. The entrance to the room was very small. So Swami's chair came and the chair couldn't go in. There's no time for next day was inauguration, and imagine the president coming and everybody coming to Swami's room and there's no chair to sit. And she said, I don't know, I just did something and then it went inside and everything was fine. And Swami came in the evening and Swami said, who brought this chair? And then she said, Swami, why you brought such a big chair? She said, Swami, just look. Just hold on 1 second. This chair was not coming in. Okay. I chanted Sai Ram. And I don't know what happened. It went in. Now don't ask me to take it out.
Amazing.
She said, it came in. Then Swami said, chant the same name and take it out.
I think only somebody like her can speak like this to Swami.
She said, Swami, it was not coming in. I chanted Sai Ram and it came in. Then Swami said, you can chant it and know. So I'm just saying, so objects are shrunk and grown in size. This one name can do anything.
Wow. And that is the name that can liberate us from all this discussion also of karma, bhakti, jnana, sadhana, non-sadhana. Wonderful. So dear listeners, I think on that note, on that beautiful note of ruminating on His name, as time is running out, we'll bring this session to a close. And please feel free to share your feedback. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Please, if you have the time, do read Swami's Prema Vahini and share with us your insights, maybe any discussion points, maybe some beautiful experiences that you have gone through trying to live these beautiful teachings of Bhagwan in your daily life. It would be a wonderful satsang to share your moments of inspiration and devotion. With gratitude to Bhagwan for this beautiful opportunity for ruminating on His message, we bring this day-long satsang to a close. My deep sense of gratitude also to Brother Aman for coming from the university and sharing his valuable time with all of us. Thank you all very much. Jai Sai Ram.